Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
Today, I'm welcoming special guest, Brandi Wilson. She is an author, speaker, personal, and executive coach. She helps people get unstuck, find clarity, and move forward. So stay tuned as we have a conversation about resiliency. So, Brandi, welcome to today's podcast. I'm so excited that you were able to do this and that you said yes. And you know, I just gave this intro for you, but also in addition to that, you also helped start two very large churches. You're just have such a gift of leadership. And but the biggest thing, in my opinion, is you raised three sons, or you're raising three sons.
Yes. Yes.
I did the same thing. So any mom of all boys, I feel an instant connection and bond to, because it's another beast. It's a whole different ball game, no pun intended. But I know you live a lot of your life doing sports and working with those boys, but how old are they now?
They are now, they'll all have birthdays coming up soon, but they're currently 22, 19, and 17. So I have two in college and one at home. And I'm going to be honest, since I am a single mom, I'm kind of dreading the empty nest a little bit.
Do you love this stage?
Oh, gosh, I love it so much. I love all the friends that come over and the conversations we have. And I feel like teenagers get a bad rap.
We loved every season. Honestly, yes. I loved each season. And truly now, our sons are 40 and about to be 35 and about to be 33. No, 40, 37, 35. Oh, see, I can't even know. they are our best friends. They truly are our best friends. And when we pick up the phone to want to do something with somebody, we would choose them first.
Yes.
And
gosh, I love that.
You have all the things to look forward to.
All the things.
I feel that there's nothing better than raising boys and one day daughters-in-laws. And people always told me when the boys were born, oh, you'll have granddaughters one day. And I thought, 25 years from now. But
yes.
I have my nine grandchildren, four are girls. So we like to do the whole thing. But man, Brandi, you just recently released a brand new book, and it's called Better Than Okay. And I ordered myself the hard copy, and then I listened to it, audiobooks. You know, I was always such a reader, but our schedules get busy now. And so I caught myself wanting, you know, to listen to it because I knew that this was coming up. And it just, honestly, it grabbed me. And we were traveling, and then we would get to a layover, and I would tell our staff from church, you've got to get this book. You've got to get this book. It really, it's just, it's so good. I mean, you chronicle a very, a deeply personal story that you walked through in the last 6 to 8 years, and you're still, we never lose the journey. We're always on the journey of whatever life throws our way. And the whole time I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, okay, you just really shared your personal story, and it's going to be so helpful. But what was your motivation? I mean, I feel like I know after reading the book, but what motivated you to share this experience?
Yes, you're right. I did. I chronicled a highly vulnerable experience. I walked through my divorce, which happened 7 years ago. I was married to a mega church pastor for 20 years, my college sweetheart. And back in 2016, he abruptly walked away from the church and our family and our marriage. And I think we both know that when things fall apart publicly, it's been falling apart behind the scenes for a while. Life as I knew it, legitimately ended, and I found myself starting over at age 42. And really because the platform that we had as being part of a large church here in Nashville. Our church was on fastest growing church in the nation list multiple years in a row. But because of that notoriety, a lot of people followed the divorce. So I post-divorce ended up talking to a lot of women, a few men, but a lot of women whose story was very similar to mine. And I just realized how much validation people needed when they were walking through the loss of their marriage. The unraveling of your family is very traumatic to walk through. And I realized they needed validation. They needed some hope and they needed some guidance in their healing. So I started a couple of years ago putting together a manuscript where I just walked through my personal journey of how I found hope and healing in divorce, really for the desire to help other people who are walking through a similar situation.
Wow. And when did you start? Like, so from start to finish, so the divorce was 7 years ago. When did you start writing the book and how long did it take?
Well, I am I like to journal. I journal a ton, Kay. So I write almost every day, Monday through Friday, and sometimes on the weekend as well, just stream of conscious writing. It's a lot of my prayer time, a lot of my reflection, self-awareness. It's a lot of processing emotion for me. So I had been writing since my divorce started in journals. So I was able to go back and pull some content from journals, really be able to reflect on the emotions I was processing at the time. Because, you know, it's easy to be 7 years post-divorce and sit here and talk about how great life is. I wanted to really be able to dive into the depths of like, when I didn't feel hope. In fact, I felt hopelessness. What was that like in order to help validate my readers? So I have always journaled. That's something I'm a big believer in. As far as the actual process and putting together of the book, I started writing it in 2022, turned it in, maybe it was 2021, turned in 2022, and it came out in 2023. So it ends up being a couple of year process. Of course, you know, there was a supply chain issue that we all had, which affected books as well. So it took a little bit longer than I think it typically would, but it was about a 2 year process.
And I love, because I recall now that you're saying it, you quoted in the book from your journal throughout the book and what you were feeling that day. And honestly, it took me there. You know, I was experiencing that, the pain with you, because, you know, once you've read the book, you'll understand, people that are watching or listening, but I mean, you took us there and you understand that it was nothing you didn't choose. I mean, it was, you said that in the book. I mean, you went, you know, one day you were top of the mountain.
Yeah.
And really a few hours later, your whole world, the rug was pulled out from under. You have no choice of your own. You didn't, you know, take part in anything that would cause your ex-husband to walk away. And so it was, you know, it was something done to you, not because of you. And I know that that happens with people. You talk so much in the book about resiliency and overcoming. And in every chapter, you have a focus about that. But I mean, the strategies. So I know the strategies just didn't come, you know, overnight. And I'm going to digress for a moment. I met you at a conference called Leading and Loving It. And I was trying to decide, maybe 8 to 10 years ago. And y'all you maybe had had a year or two. It was maybe year three.
Yes.
And you were there with Lori Wilhite and you guys had founded it. And so I know, because I read the book, that, you know, that's such a big deal still to this day. It's a huge ministry for women in ministry. But you talked about, so maybe we'll start there. You talked about the first conference back after you had gone through the divorce, and what that had to feel like. I mean, so that has to start the strategy, the process of healing, because you're facing thousands.
Yes.
And you were Brandi Wilson, who was married to the mega pastor and all that. And now you're Brandi Wilson, who's walking this journey of singleness and divorce that, you know, you don't want to be there.
Right. No, I didn't want to be there. I tried to get out of it. In fact, I had canceled my plane ticket and decided I wasn't coming. It was my first time back post-resignation. I was in the process of a divorce, but that had not become public yet. So it was it was really me showing up knowing what was going on behind the scenes, but everyone else was getting the story that was being written about an overworked, burned out, broken pastor. And I, of course, was privy to a lot of information that the readers on blog posts and newspapers and all that weren't privy to. So I knew the truth of the situation and what was going on. And I knew I was walking through a divorce. And Lori Wilhite, as you mentioned, is not just my coworker, but also one of my dearest best friends. And she just really encouraged me to come out to Vegas to be with she and Lisa Hughes, who is another friend I know that we have in common. And she just said, Brenda, you've been staying at home fighting for someone who doesn't love you. Why don't you come and spend a couple of days with people who love you? So I made the decision to go out for conference that year. And of course, once she got a yes for that, Lori was doing everything she could to get me to do what I typically do at the conference and help her host it. And I was on stage hosting with her and just had to really address the elephant in the room, because everyone had known me as Brandi Wilson, mega church pastor's wife, successful church planter, started from nothing and grew a church very large. And now I knew I was no longer a pastor's wife. And I also knew I was no longer going to be a wife. And I just had to address that from stage. And there was this response from the ladies who sat in that, the seats of the audience that year, that was just overwhelming love and prayer and strength for me. I wish everyone walking through a divorce could have the fan club cheering them on that I had at this conference. They just became the best support system, leading and loving it. The ladies of the community have sent me cards and prayed for me and my kids, not just thinking about me, but also thinking about my kids and how my kids have been impacted.
Because your boys were, that was such, that, so 8 years ago or whatever, when that, wow. Yeah.
They were in fifth grade, seventh grade, and ninth grade. When
we all know, if anyone has raised children, they know that age is so. So I know all the thoughts, and you needed that support system. And when they did that, when they supported you in that way, I mean, what did that, standing there in that moment, in that room? I've been in that room, in that auditorium. So I know,
yes.
Huge auditorium. And you're standing there thinking, you know, I would like to run now.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. I wanted to hide out in the back and not see anyone the entire time. But there was also this empowerment that I've received by being honest about what I was walking through. There was encouragement at a level I never, ever had experienced before. And there was love. And I was in a scenario who the person who was supposed to love me the most had left. So I had this ability to be able to join this group of women who really just purely loved me and wanted to see the best for my life.
And you mentioned not everyone has that support group, because it seems when, you know, working in a church and you, and when friends of mine or acquaintances, you know, go through a divorce or something, and then the enemy, Satan, and we'll talk about, you know, we're both believers and we're Christians and we have an adversary, but he would want us to think that everybody's talking about you. Nobody supports you. They know there's another story, and he lies. That's all he does is lie. And so I know you had to, you know, walk through all the lies of the enemy to speak truth to yourself. And you said, you mentioned that, in your book too, and just a counselor. I mean, do you still see a counselor? I do.
Yes. Yes. Therapy is huge for me. It's usually one of the first questions. I'm also a certified coach. So I walk with a lot of women who are also going through divorce. And one of the first questions I ask them is, one, what does your support system look like? And two, are you seeing a therapist? Even as a coach, I know that there are things that a therapist will be able to help you work through at a level that will help you break the chains of what you're processing and what the enemy has thrown at you. Therapy is huge. I did an intensive at a place here in Nashville called Onsite, which was really great for my healing. And it was group counseling done onsite, where we spent gosh, 5.5 days just diving into what life looks like and how we can deal with what we've experienced in order to live life as a healthier version of ourselves moving forward. So yes, totally a big fan of therapy.
Do you feel like as you're talking, and we talked about you earlier before we started this podcast about you knowing two of my daughters-in-laws, you've been on World Help on missions trips with them. And I would think I would know the answer to this, but you know, you're going through all this with yourself, trying to get yourself back on track of, you know, but yet you keep going on these missions trips to give to people, help to people, pour out to people. And I'm sure that has to also be part of the healing process.
Oh, for sure. I think it's really important to make sure that you're thinking about other people and being able to pay it forward, so to speak. So yeah, I love those trips. They're actually one of the highlights of my year to be able to get to travel with World Help and introduce other people, other women, to the vision of World Help and what they do on the ground in their ministries overseas.
I love that. And I love that you do that. When you're the title of your book, Better Than Okay, because don't we say this a lot when people say, oh, how are you? And I catch myself all the time saying, okay, oh, okay. But I love that you titled your book Better Than Okay. And so how did you come up with that title? Because I mean, I'm encapsulating an 8-year journey in a 30-minute podcast, but and that's why I really do feel like people should get the book, because it really will go into detail on going through any kind of setback in our life. It's not just if you've been divorced or going through a divorce, but when you have a setback in your life, you know, you have to somehow find the resiliency or the wherewithal to be better than okay. So how did you get the name of the book?
Well, I realized, as I said, I talked to a lot of women who are walking through divorce, and I realized that pretty much the first question they would ask me is, am I going to be okay? And I realized that my response to them was always, you're going to be better than okay. So we just ended up pulling that and using it as the title of the book, and I actually love it too. I think it is, you know, so often we respond to lots of questions in our life with okay, and what does a life that is better than okay look like? And that's kind of what I dive into in the book.
I love that. And I, you know, during COVID, that whole 2020 and 2021, and a phrase that was thrown around a lot was, this is the new normal. Like, I hate it. I do not like that phrase. And I would tell people, do not use that phrase around me, the new normal. I liked my old normal. I liked the old normal, where everybody wasn't so wigged out, and I didn't want a new normal, and I didn't want my, you know, to have to school my grandkids at my house because their parents all had jobs that were, you know, they couldn't not be at work. But I love that you, when you say better than okay, that's different than this is my new normal, because better than okay tells us, in those words, that the Lord, the God we serve, Jesus, he can take the mess and he makes it better than okay. He doesn't say, here's your mess, now you just have to have a messy life. So mess, now you just, here's your new normal of mess. But he makes it better than okay. And I think that's what your book did for my heart, was just anything in our life we're going through. And I think about your kids, my heart went out to you, but to your sons. And you're such a committed, devoted parent. I mean, it's evident. If anybody just follows your social media, it will be evidence how much you love your children and how close you are to your kids. Can you tell us a little bit about, I think 8 years ago till now, I mean, there's a lot of steps and a lot of journey with children, and what that had to be like for them and for you trying to do two things.
Yes. Yeah. I think probably the first thing I did is we sold the house we had lived in as a family, and I bought a new house, a house that honestly is just a gift from God. But when we moved into this house, I was pretty soon after just sat down with them one night at dinner and just said, like, hey guys, this is a house of truth. We have lived through a lot of lies. We have lived through a lot of things being hidden. You know, here's the difference between secrets and privacy. But for now, we can handle anything if you tell me the truth about it. I can't deal with lies anymore. We don't live that life anymore. We are living a life of truth. So that really kind of set the tone for us, that the four of us were starting over. And my goal was to redefine family like nothing was missing. And I remember the moment that it was Christmas, probably my second Christmas divorced, and getting through the Christmas celebration and laying down that night and thinking, oh my gosh, this is like the first big major celebration we've had where I never thought about being divorced, or that our family unit doesn't have a dad who lives in the home anymore. And I was like, I think we're doing it. I think we're redefining family like nothing is missing. So that really helped us define other values we wanted to live by. Laughter is a huge value for us. We like to have fun. We like to be silly. We watch the, you know, shows, reality TV shows together, just to be able to laugh and act silly together. Showing up is super important for our family. We show up to each other's events and ball games and anything that feels special to that person. We work really hard to show up for as best we can. So that became another value of ours. But it, you know, I think the best part of when our lives fall apart is we get to put the pieces of our family and our life back together the way we want to. So that's just what I did. I reevaluated, what do I want to take from my old life and still incorporate into this family unit? And what are the new things that I want to bring into our family so that we live a different story moving forward?
I have so many thoughts, and we for sure won't have time to go through all of them. It makes me just want to sit down with you.
I'd love that. I would love it.
Coffee and just because I have so many questions. We're honestly, I mean, even to this is, I love that you said the color, the cover of your book is the colors in your home.
Yes.
Your house. I pick up on, I mean, I love details like that. And I'm like, I just want to see your house. I feel like I need to come up and go to your house now that I'm, you know, your biggest fan.
Nashville, come to Nashville.
It has your, you know, book cover. But I, you know, thinking through your sons and everything, I just have to know. So I know they play sports and you have one graduating college. So what's their favorite sport? What do you love to do with them?
We're huge football fans. We are huge football fans. I know you're a football fan too. But all three of my kids have played football, starting in elementary school through high school. My two older sons both play in college at D3 schools. My youngest is, he's QB1 at our 6A school. So we have a really large, about 2,500 kids at his school, and he's QB1 on Friday nights, which is the most nerve-wracking I've ever had, or watching this youngest of mine. I thought I had all this under control with my defensive backs that I had raised with son one and son two. And then I get a quarterback and I'm like, this
is hard too, because they're class people. I'm always wanting to blame the linebackers. I'm thinking, if you'd have put pressure on the quarterback, my DB son would not have had that pass thrown on him. And he's the one out in the open being embarrassed. And now you've got QB1. And I'm thinking, those are the parents. Okay, there is something worse. Maybe having the kicker for a son. I feel like a kicker.
Oh, true.
Oh, I can't even watch. I'm like, oh, true. Jesus, I pray for their mother right now.
That's what I need too, Kay. I'm like, that poor boy's mom is nervous wreck right now in the stands.
I do that every time. They're so sad. I can't handle it. I love that. I love going to games. And I know you.
I know. I'm getting ready. Next year, I'll head into my senior year, and I will have done 10 years of Friday Night Lights. You know, you did it as well, I'm sure. But I'm kind of like, I don't know what I'll do Fridays in the fall. After
I'm sad than they were. Literally, I learned the end of football season.
I will too.
I just watch everybody's game, and I feel like that the coach, the University of Alabama coach, well, we have a new one now, but I feel like if they knew me, they would love me best. But what do you follow a college, besides where your sons play, what's your favorite college football team?
I was born and raised in Kentucky, so I'm a UK Wildcats fan, but more basketball than college football. College football, I kind of just, you know, I'm one of those Southerners who I cheer for the SEC.
Me too.
So I'm like, the SEC is doing great. It feels good to me. So,
Mandy's from Kentucky. My daughter-in-law, Mandy, she's great.
Yes.
And so her sister lives in Albuquerque too. And they're, so I can pull for Kentucky through this, you know, through basketball.
Yeah.
I
guess
it's my team, but that's
March
cool.
Madness.
Yes. Exciting. So I love this in your book. And I really, again, so many things we could talk about, but resiliency, I can imagine that So many of your traditions, we talked about Christmas, you talked about that a minute ago, that so many traditions changed abruptly. Mm-hmm. Whether it's family dinner, I mean, there's an empty seat all of a sudden. I mean, absolutely, yeah. It's different. And your kids started getting older, so they're mm-hmm. going to have more, they have cars, they drive,
yes.
You know, 4 and 5 and 6 years ago, when they start going out at night. And
yes.
I think you're thinking, wait a minute. Yeah. I still want you
hang
to
hang out with me.
I'm cool. Hang out with me. So you give some ideas in your book, and one of them I just loved. And I thought maybe you could share about your milkshake Mondays. I think that's a great idea for people listening, because part of resiliency is you might have to create something new, because you can't maybe just bounce back and it won't be the same as it was, but it can be better than okay. And so tell yes. me some of the new traditions you started.
Oh, gosh. Well, Milkshake Monday is probably my favorite, the one that you've referenced. And basically, we get my kids together. All three of them have done this through high school. But every Monday night, I cook dinner, and their friends are welcome to join or can just show up for when we all watch The Bachelor together. Which is why I'll never be asked to write a parenting book, because that's what I do, is I watch The Bachelor with my children. I always say I'm trying to teach them how not to date by watching The Bachelor together. But and then as we're watching The Bachelor, I pull out the blender and I make a big round of chocolate milkshakes. And they all act like it's the best milkshake they've ever had in their lives. And I tell them it's because I use vanilla ice cream with chocolate milk.
Yes, thank you. Don't use chocolate ice cream. It over-chocolates the whole thing.
It over-chocolates the whole thing.
See,
so yes. Vanilla ice cream, chocolate milk, they love it. But they know, and they're disappointed if for some reason I forget ice cream or whatever, or if I want to, you know, somebody dropped off crumble cookies a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, oh, instead of milkshakes, we're having cookies. And one of them said, can we have milkshakes instead? Of course you can. So they just really see that as a tradition, Milkshake Monday. So yeah, that's a huge one for us.
Especially people are looking for things to do with their family. And, you know, maybe someone they work full time outside the home and maybe don't have time to put together where I cook all day for a family meal. But something yes. like that for teenage kids is perfect.
Yes.
When you want to draw them together. And I'm such a proponent of being eye to eye with your kids and being at the table and doing things with them. I think it's critical. And that's just I've learned, you know, I love that about your book, that you shared, you know, some of those things with us. And I know the journey. You could probably honestly write a parenting book, and probably will, about, you know, raising kids, you know, and how to, you know, navigate through all the things you probably, when they're older, I don't know, but navigate through their seasons of change, going through right. life with parents, you know, that weren't together anymore, and how that feels and looks. But it looks like they're thriving at any level, that you know, have done such a great job with them. I know through God's help. I wonder, there have to be favorite scriptures that you held on to, I would think, in the different stages, but, you know, talking about resiliency and coming back, you mentor, you coach, you teach women in ministry, you know, you should give a path to women in ministry, a place. And so there have to be things that you've held on to, that you've given to other people too, scriptures that yes. can help us know. Like if I want today, I'm struggling through something, or someone listening or watching, and they just need to get to the Bible, the Word of God today, to be able to learn some scriptures that you held on to. What would this be?
Oh, I love, and it has kind of resurfaced in the season of life I'm in, but I love Isaiah 43:19. For I'm about to do something new. Don't you see I've already begun? I will make rivers in dry wastelands and pathways through the wilderness. And I just think that's such a great reminder when we're walking through something tough, that there are new things to come, that God has new for us. And even if we don't see it yet, He's already working behind the scenes for that. And that just brings me so much hope that, you know what, this is not something I have control of. This is not something that I need to fear. This is not something I need to be anxious over, that God is taking care of it and working behind the scenes before me. And He knows what's coming, and I trust Him, and He's always shown up for me. He's always got my back. So if I'm going to see how he has worked for me in the future, then I know that he's continuing to work for me now.
Did you feel like, and I will start to wrap it up, but did you feel like in the beginning of this, you know, event, life throwing at you, that did you ever feel like it's not, he doesn't have my back? God, I don't feel you. I can't find you. You know,
definitely. I often say too, part of the reason I have the relationship with God I have right now is because he handled all the emotions I had when I was going through the separation and divorce. So he handled not just my, you know, tears, but he handled my anger and my frustration. One of my chapter titles is called "I Cussed a Lot," because, man,
I thought I got ready for that when I went, okay, here we go.
Here we go. What's she going to say? But yeah, I think God just he stayed consistent and became secure to me because he handled everything that I threw at him. But I had this moment very early on, and it right after my ex-husband resigned, where nothing around me felt good. Nothing. I couldn't see any goodness in my life outside of my three kids. My three kids are obviously goodness, but for me and my just life as Brandy, I couldn't see any goodness. But I had this moment where I thought to myself, and it was the Lord, God is still good. Nothing around me feels good, but I know that God is still good. How can I look for the goodness of God around me? And that was the day I started what I now know is a gratitude practice, but it was really just me sitting down every day in my journal and writing down 3 to 5 things that showed me the goodness of God. And sometimes it was as simple as, you know, dinner with my kids on the patio, or the daffodils were blooming and it was beautiful and gave me something to look at. So it didn't have to be big things, but it was just me recognizing the goodness of God in the little moments that were around me. And that gratitude practice really helped me keep going in a lot of ways.
That's I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I think when we're going through our everyday life, we don't see the things that could be counted as that we should be grateful for. And after all these years of Monday night dinners, our family, just this year, we started a gratitude jar, and I've seen people talk about it, but even my youngest grandchildren that are here, there are 12 of us that eat together on Mondays. We pass the little papers around and we write something that we're grateful for that week. And at the end of the year, we're going to bring those out. They're dated and our names are on them. We're going to read them to each other. I felt so compelled, like you were mentioning, that the word of God, not just for us, but we're to pass that down, that we have to tell the next generation and the next generation. And you did that. And I love that you do that. And you're writing it down in your journal and you're sharing. I felt so hopeful when I got to the end of your book. And I think that that's such a critical place to be, because you're sharing this story, but I didn't get through the book and think, I felt hope for not just you, but, you know, myself and people, friends I have that are going through something, that there is the other side. And yes, we will be able to look back at the journey and see God's hand on our life the whole time. And I truly am so moved by that you would have the guts to just say, I'm going to put it out there and let people know. I mean, you're a Christian woman, pastor's wife, and you're helping so many people. And, you know, as we're finishing today, I'm just grateful that I met you and that we had that dinner together that night. I'm, you know, like I said, the table means everything to me. And I love that we met across from each other at a table that we can, you know, carry that through. And I will not forget that God's plan for us is to be better than okay. He never wants us just to maintain and just to be, you know, status quo, live in the new normal.
But it's he has the abundance for us, a life of abundance.
Love it. And I believe that for you. I would speak that to you in closing, that I believe that your best days are ahead and that God's got such a plan for you and your sons and your daughters-in-law to be and your grandchildren to come will all benefit from your steadfastness of your relationship with Christ. I believe that with all my heart.
Thank you
so much for coming.
I love this conversation so much.
God bless you.
Thank you, Kay.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kaywoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.